This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To Jeffrey Wright and company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, you can download the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen, stream live anywhere. You can even listen on demand to stay up to date with all the content here from 92.9 FM ESPN. Dennis Fuller is producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company is, he is each and every Monday on the program, the head coach and team director of Team Thad of the Nike EYBL circuit. Follow him on all socials at Dream Big Herd. Coach Norton Herd the Fourth. Good day, sir.
Yes, sir. Great day. Great sports week.
Let's see what we got coming up on the program. It, of course, is Monday, so we will overreact to the weekend. Great Sunday for the Tigers yesterday in Birmingham as they come back from a six-point halftime deficit to knock off UAB 88-81, essentially clinching the American. They still technically have to win one of these next two. We got bigger fish to fry if they do not win one of these next two, Herd. That could get a little dicey. So, again, didn't officially, you can't hang the banner yesterday, but yesterday was basically the day that you needed. So we'll start with the Tigers. Then we'll get into the Grizzlies, who fell final basket on both Friday and Saturday. Two very different games. Talk about that with Coach Herd. Jason Munn's going to join us here in about 35 minutes or so. We'll get his thoughts on everything happening in Tiger basketball. We'll get into the list to start hour number two. Jimmy Johnson formally announces his retirement. I felt like when they did the Fox, Herd, I don't know if you were watching Fox's Super Bowl pregame, but they did like an AI-created Jimmy Johnson going throughout like his entire career. And they finished it up by not announcing their retirement. It was like, I think they were kind of tipping their hand that they're telling us that he is retiring, so we'll get into that. Also, we've got clarity on the ACC's future as they had a big ruling today. We'll get into the combine also during hour number two. We'll tell your story and then we'll get out of here. But Herd, I think let's start first with the good news of the weekend. And my first overreaction is this: the Tigers' chaotic offseason, everything from Penny being salty with the media to the weird Tuesday morning, I believe it was, in September when it's announced the entire coaching staff is going to be fired and moving on. The entire chaotic nature of it all, of the offseason, I guess is how I'll say it, it was worth it. It worked because look at what it resulted. You're likely now, you're one game away from clinching your first ever outright regular season title since Cal in 09, I believe. So we're talking about 15 years, outright title. And more importantly, Herd, it's the best season of the Penny Hardaway era. From consistency to lack of drama, everything about this team has just been business as usual. And so to me, it's one of those situations where sometimes maybe a culture change is needed for whatever the reasons may be, but you do something that people in real time are asking, what are you doing? I think it's safe to say at this point it worked, and hats off to Penny, everyone in the program. Hats off, obviously, to the young men for going out on the floor and earning it. Like, that's I never want to push them to the side because they're the ones that are putting the bodies on the line. But like, that's kind of what I'm struck by. It's like this season where if you think back to how everyone was feeling emotionally in September, if I would have told you this is going to be the least chaotic and this is going to be a season where you're going to spend the most amount of weeks ranked in the top 25 and you're largely going to have no drama, I think most people would have said, I'm going to need to see that to believe it.
No, that's true. Let me echo you by saying congratulations to the team, to Penny Hardaway, the staff, you know, Trey Turner, JJ, my guy, Nolan Smith. I mean, they have done a great job this year. And like you say, I feel like it's over with, even though they got to win another game, because it seems like the from what I have seen around everything, like the celebration has already.
So basically the way that it worked out was, A, you knew what you had this week. So you've got to win at UTSA tomorrow, or you got to win at South Florida to close out on Senior Day. By winning that game, you basically eliminated the biggest challengers to end up finishing with a record, because now, technically, if you only win one of two, North Texas could win out and tie you. But because North Texas and Memphis only played once this season and Memphis won it, Memphis would win the tiebreaker.
Oh, okay.
And then by beating UAB, the best UAB can do now is, if Memphis were to go winless this week, the best UAB could do in the standings is tie Memphis, but they would have lost both times head to head.
So if this on your betting thing, Memphis like has a 80-90% chance now of winning it, right?
Oh my God, I would think it's even
higher than that.
Yeah, I would say let's look, to lose tomorrow, or I'm sorry, yeah, Tuesday. They have an 84% chance of winning. It would be at least 94%, because they had a 94% chance of winning against South Florida, and they just have to win one. And Jason points out also they could clinch with a North Texas loss tonight.
Oh, okay. Well, no, you know, the offseason was really crazy. It was a lot of drama. It seemed like it went from drama, chaos. It seemed like at one point it was like somebody was trying to tear the program down inside. I mean, it was just all kind of.
I mean, there was all, like, there's finger pointing of the highest order.
Yeah.
There's scabs here, malls. Yeah.
Like a movie.
Everybody's looking for the mall. We're going to burn it down to the ground and figure out who's the lead.
And with me and Jason and John T, there's nothing I told you. There's like, people were getting mad at me because I wasn't as invested or thought I was taking up for a penny. Chemistry and all those things matter. But what I was saying back then was, as harsh as this stuff make the program look, the only thing that matters is how you do throughout the season.
Yep.
I mean, in reality, I know now it can make it more difficult with more drama. It can make it like, if people not, it can feel like, are they putting the main thing? But in reality, you know this about sports. Outside of committing a major, major, major crime, winning, people looks over a lot of things.
No, it's like I've always said, because I've played on my share of good teams and I've played on my share of god-awful teams, and I've always laughed at how one of the number one stories is locker room. And yes, there is usually a common thread of the bad teams that I've played on. The locker room's not been great. I've also played on good teams where the locker room wasn't that good, where you just have issues, but you had better players than everybody and you just kind of figure it out. And so I think it always just gets viewed as, well, only the good teams have everything buttoned up and whatnot. It's like, no, I've seen plenty of good. I mean, for God's sakes, heard Joey Dorsey punched a guy at the Plush Club on the team that went to the national title game.
And I was around. There's a lot of other stuff that didn't come out that was happening, right?
Correct. So that team still kicked a lot of ass.
So that's what I'm saying. Off court don't fully have to do with on court all the time.
100%.
You know, and so that's what
I
want.
It can, but it definitely does not.
No, it doesn't. And that's why I thought, not to take up a penny, because it was some games he lost last year And that's a friend of mine that I feel like everybody should have got on them. They were unacceptable, like the 2-3. But the summer stuff, it just felt like, and I get it, you know, I've been around media, I'm new to it, but I just feel like it was too many stories trying to be made. It was big because, to me, that stuff didn't have as much. You would almost think about, it almost felt like people wanted him to get fired by the offseason. No, fire somebody for losing 10 games or something, like not the offseason things that was, because I didn't hear nothing go on to the point where, like, the coaches was in the scandal. It was just this, all this crazy stuff. And the thing is, I know coaches around the country, and I love Memphis and I love our fans, but I felt like we were slightly sabotaging our program because small stories were becoming too big that I know that happens at other programs and not more. Like, if we would go so strong at it in Memphis, and y'all do such a good job because we have really good reporters and writers here, that the national people end up picking it up.
Yeah. Well, it's always, I've always felt it was, there was this weird reality, and maybe it's not as much anymore, but forever, I always felt like the Tigers got covered like the pro team, while the Grizzlies got covered, honestly, like a college team with like rah-rah. And, you know, like everyone was kind of cheerleading for the most part. Not to say there haven't been good Grizzlies reporters. It's also the nature now, the way of it's the Grizzlies make it very difficult to cover them in the sense of breaking news and whatnot. And that's an NBA thing. We see that pretty much throughout the country. But it almost felt like at times the Tigers were judged too harshly. This really predates Penny. I'm not just saying this just happened with Penny, but it always felt that way to me, that like the Tigers were covered like the pro team where the Grizzlies were covered like a college team.
And I agree with that because growing up here, I don't know what they do we did in the water, if it was just a culture, but you kind of became, growing up as a kid with sports, a Tigers fan before a Grizzlies fan.
Sure.
Like, outside of the
There's
year-
more history, and for the longest time, really, I mean, think about it, up until Cal gets here, and Cal started, but by the, it flips at one point, maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 years into it, a lot of the Tiger roster was made up of Memphis kids.
Mm-hmm.
So it went more than just, oh, it's your hometown team. It was usually hometown team with a lot of hometown guys.
Yeah, you're more familiar with it. And I feel like outside of the years that Zach Randolph and them had they run, it was just like the Tigers was just more exciting. You know, when Cal, we was going to the Elite Eight, the Final Four. Now, all of this is pre-Ja Morant. Now,
yeah.
With Ja Morant, I mean, people from all over the world, I know, be in Memphis talking about they're going to a Grizzly game. You know what I mean? Like that, I'm talking about people that
he is
never
an attraction.
Yeah, so with that, and they have been, when he's healthy, they have been like a top three seed a lot when the whole team is healthy. So in the West, so they actually been worth the ticket to, you know, the price of a mission. So, but outside of that, like you say, the Tigers done their thing. And those are nature. So we're happy for them. And to me, if they win out the rest of the year, I know it's going to be hard to do. I think that the NCAA should give them some type of love and get them a 3 seed or something.
So I'm glad you mentioned it because I looked it up before the show. So I went back for the last 5 tournaments. So the Tigers today are 16th in the AP poll. And if you go and you look at the last 5 tournaments, and you take the final AP poll before Selection Sunday, so and see how that lines up. Last year, every team in the top AP top 16 was a 6 seed or better. South Carolina was the number 16 team. They got a 6 seed. Everybody else was a 5 seed or better. In 2023, every AP top 16 was a 5 seed or better. In 2022, the top 16 seeds were the same 16 teams in the AP poll. It didn't mirror
so top
one
four.
One like, but the top 16 teams were all top 4 seeds, okay. Not in the same order as the AP poll, but all 16 teams were included in the top 4 seeds. And then in 2021, 15 of the top 16 received 4 seeds or better. All 16 got 5 seeds or better. And then in 2019, 15 of the 16 teams received a top 4 seed. Nevada was ranked 14th and got a 7 seed. So the only problem is
the teams that you start to look at that don't get the top four seeds fall into the mid-major category. But now we're at a point where if Memphis were to win out, that would then put them at, I believe my math would be correct, two remaining this week, and I think if they were to win out, that'd be three, plus likely a win against North Texas, which could be a borderline another quad one win. That would then put them at 29-5. I'm now at the point where I thought six was the ceiling heading into last week, but there's been enough kind of topsy-turviness in the SEC and in the Big Ten to where you're starting to see a few teams fall behind, and then it's also possibly take more losses. I'm open to the idea of a five. I don't know if I can get you to a three seed, though.
Yeah, three was going too far.
But I think I can get you to a five.
But what this is what I was hoping. Sometime, let's just shake it up a little bit.
Well, I will say this. Memphis's on-court resume, what you've done, is more reflective of a top four seed than their predictive metrics. And so we had Patrick Stevens on the afternoon show, or on this show on Friday, and he's even written about it for the Washington Post, where Memphis is this one poster child of what is the committee going to do with them, because their win-loss record and who they've beaten, how they've beaten them, where they've beaten them, and the fact that, for the most part, these wins are standing up. I mean, they're going to likely have a win against the Big Ten champion, regular season champion in Michigan State. You're going to have a win on the road against Clemson, who's likely to finish number two in the ACC. Missouri is going to be a clear top half SEC team and potentially top five SEC team. So these wins are holding up. Like UConn, yes, isn't going to win the Big East outright, but UConn's still clearly going to be a tournament team. Whereas last year when you had the good wins early and you were starting to believe, well, we started to realize, well, maybe those teams weren't actually as good. And then when Memphis started to fall apart internally, it didn't back it up. But this year they're going to have both the resume and the win losses. The only thing that's hurting them is metrics, but it's entirely possible the committee can go, listen, the predictive metrics don't like them, but this is a 29-5 team with, I think it's at this point it would be potentially six quad one wins, and they could be 13-2 in quads one and two, or 13-3. And so that would be the resume of what we're talking about, a top four seed or better.
Yeah, I agree, because I think if they win out, Jeffrey, I don't know why I got this number in my head, but I think they would be something like 13-14 going into the tournament, because some of them other teams are going to beat each other up a little bit.
I mean, I think it's possible they could be even better.
Really?
Because, all right, let me pull up the rankings that were released today. Okay, so here are the teams that are directly in front of them. Missouri, who they have a win against, but Missouri still got the rest of the SEC schedule plus tournament. Louisville, Maryland, Wisconsin, Clemson. Ironically, two of the five teams in front of them, they have a win against. And one of which is on the road. So, I mean, maybe like Clemson, we know, is at least at some point they're either going to win the ACC outright or they're going to take a loss to Duke again. Mm-hmm. So, and Maryland, Wisconsin are likely at some point, like someone's going to, they're not going to run the table. So, I mean, it's entirely possible if Memphis were to win out that they could hop. We know at least Clemson or Louisville, one of the two, is not winning out and winning the ACC. And Maryland, Wisconsin, so they could at least jump up another three spots.
And so, what you're saying, that's what kind of made me think about, is a three possible?
I still think what's going to hurt them is the Arkansas State loss, and that Wichita State loss.
But could Memphis become like the this year football version of Notre Dame, where they
it's so hard to compare because there's so few games. Like, Notre Dame, I think still by the end, had the worst loss of the season, like in terms of point spread, whatnot. Like, but they also had the opportunity to win 10 straight games. Whereas Memphis,
it's hard to go on that kind of run. And then the other aspect of it is how are they going to sort out SEC and Big Ten teams? Because right now, you've got Tennessee, who wins a big one on Saturday against Bama, and you're looking at the SEC potentially getting five of the top eight. It seems at minimum they're going to at least get four of the top eight. And then the Big Ten's going to backfill with a bunch of three seeds.
Yeah, that's true. It was wishful thinking, but I'm just so ready to see Memphis finish the job, you know, and like sure. I say, regular season. Because it's March now, and I get excited.
Different spring in your step, everybody. You can feel it.
I even just, and I'm letting people know this because everybody is so courteous to me, even you, Jet, we're like, people keep trying to offer me food. March the 1st, I'm on a diet. It's going to be, in 3 days, I ain't ate nothing bad. I'm getting ready. I'm getting ready for the, you know, cameras on me a lot doing AAU. I don't need to be whopped.
You're mixing in a lot of salads.
Yeah. Salads, Chipotle. So I say that to just say it feels good right now. Even some of the games over the weekend, Jeffrey, it already feels like March Madness. Like, I think a couple people hit a game winner from
Michigan and Michigan State. Tennessee.
Yeah, Tennessee.
Tennessee had the big one.
Was that girls with Michigan and Michigan State or boys? I thought it was a girl game, too.
Well, so it was midweek, so it wasn't on the weekend. Because we had back-to-back nights where Michigan State hits a half-court shot to beat Maryland, and then Michigan hits the buzzer beater to beat Rutgers. It was on back-to-back nights. Yeah. I don't remember if it was Wednesday, Thursday, if it was Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah, the kid with the braid.
Right.
But they was back showing it this week. Showing.
Yes.
That's about it, yeah. Yeah, and then, like I say, Tennessee hit the shot.
Yes.
So it's starting to feel like March, Jeffrey. It really is.
It definitely is. Okay, anything else Tiger-wise? Because obviously we got Munns coming up. Anything else Tiger-wise that you want to hit before we talk?
No, my perspective, I think that's good. The other thing I would say that's really good about this, and I took time and researched it, and Jason hit me with this, is another thing I want to give this staff and team props for is, like, when you look at Dane Danger and PJ, and look how, like, more productive they are. Like, people were saying this, Dane Danger is kind of like a role player. He just had 17 rebounds.
I mean,
again.
Heard, obviously, context matters. He was largely, like, moved to the bench. Like, they changed the at first, Illinois wanted to be more play through the post.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they realized, like, hey, our guards, like, we need to play more tempo, it moved Dane completely out of the rotation for the most part.
Yeah, so think about that and what he's doing now. People saying his first team. We know PJ is great, but he even been more efficient. You know what I mean?
100% agree.
And, you know, so it's like, I want to.
He's not just putting up, okay, this is a guy that's just taking all the shots on a bad team, getting his numbers. No, he's been playing very efficiently.
Yeah, so that I just want to give the players and the staff their props, too, before we move on. Because, yeah, some people just see the box score. But if you go look at it, like, these kids are all developing in the right direction and playing at a high level.
I totally agree. That's another outstanding point. Everybody now is playing at a higher level than they were at their previous stops. And I completely agree with you on that. All right, now let's get to the bad of the weekend. All right, here's my overreaction for the weekend. Grizzlies are too soft. Think about it in these terms. Even a guy like Jaren, who has to play and bang down with every big in the world, you still view his game more as athletic finesse than you do just raw, pure power. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
I think in the end, like, what's getting them is they're just, it's when you're watching it, it's like, oftentimes it's coming down to, like, can they get a rebound? Can they get a stop? They can't bully somebody or they can't stay in front. And I know Taylor mentioned on Friday night's game, he told Vince, go and help hard. But at the same time, it's like, part of the reason why I need to go and help hard is Ja got beat right off the dribble. And then on top of that, Vince then gets out of position by helping hard. Brunson still gets by him, both of them. And then Jaren has to come off. So now you've got three guys for Santi to cover one, two, basically right at the basket. You're either going to get a wide open dunk or you had OG to get the three. But to me, what it really is boiling down to is, like, they're just not physical enough, and I think a lot of the defensive problems stems from that.
Yeah, yeah, I see where you're going with that. You know, by the way, Jeffrey, you know, I was love the group. You know, I was happy with the shot.
OG with your boy.
OG is my kid or whatever, so he was in town. Here
you might have been the one person in town.
Well, it was a few of us that was cheering for him or whatever.
You had to do like the quiet fist pump, like where you just kind of give a little, like right underneath.
Yeah, one of those. Now OG actually been playing good ball now, but to the Grizzlies' defense, outside of the defense being weak, I probably would have rather me being a coach, him shoot it, than, you know,
wide open
Brunson or, you know, other, you know, guys
Cat.
On the team. Yeah.
Was Mitchell, maybe Mitchell was down because Mitchell played.
Yeah, Mitchell played too that day. Mitchell just got back. They've been pretty good. So I would have rather that. So I, from that standpoint, but like you say, that wasn't a game plan for OG. It was a game plan for them to. And
to be clear, Brunson made a hell of a pass.
For sure.
Like he got the entire defense to flow with him. And he throws it all the way across his body, across the court, right to a shooting position. Like it, I do think oftentimes we make the mistake of thinking that other players can't make good plays too.
Yeah.
He made a good play. Philosophically, though, how would you feel? Because the common criticism was, why would you give up the shot that can beat you versus if you give up the layup, there was enough time to where worst case scenario is, you call timeout, and then you get to go. Worst case, you're going to overtime.
Overtime, yeah. Now, I agree with that, too, about running people off the line. You know what was interesting with me, Jeff, is like, you know, the Lakers is like, I always go get prime coverage. And now Luka then tripled that, I think, right? So, at first, I thought the Lakers was like, hey, you know, I check up on it out every day, and I know the Grizzlies, which I have loved, have been in second place for a while. But today, they're saying, just only because of a few losses, you're in the West. The Lakers are 2 now. They was just 6, and the Grizzlies are like 4.
So the Lakers have taken the 2 spot. The Grizzlies and Nuggets are tied half game back.
Oh, so okay. So okay, I don't know why.
And then the Rockets, I believe, are a half game back of the Grizzlies.
And the reason I brought that up, I think me and you, I know on the other show too, but we have said, where do we predicted one day how. How low we think the grit. And we all was kind of like top 3. And now I'm feeling like, okay, if they lose another game until they could be potentially at 5 and 6. And I never pictured that up until now.
It goes to show, this was, I thought, the mistake of the weekend. If you're going to rest half your team like they did on Saturday, you better win that game. Because now they're starting to do this song and dance, and I'd be curious to know how you feel about it. They're now admitting we're trying to balance just focused on the standings and making sure we get everybody back healthy in the playoffs.
So unlike how we keep tripping about the Grizzlies, the Tigers to have a higher seed, their main thing is they think they're okay as long as they're healthy. So that's their number one goal.
That's their public position. Is how I would say it.
Yeah, so,
I think the reality is, I think they thought even resting guys on Saturday they would still win, and they didn't. Yeah, because they gave up 46 points in the second quarter. They had a game in which Jaren has 42, 32 of which come in the second half, like single-handedly like just willing them. But because they fell and dug such a hole in the first half, giving up nearly 70 points, like, you left it up to a one shot, and De'Aaron Fox made a shot.
Yeah, I agree. And then I also think, Jeffrey, that they have been in some higher seas in the future, and it didn't go nowhere because they were injured.
Sure.
So I think some of it may be truth. They feel like with our core team, we have a pretty good chance against anyone, and they want to be healthy going into the playoffs.
Well, I think it's like you want to be fair. Okay. Ja has had a dislocated hip. He also had labrum surgery last season. He's had a sprained AC joint. And you know that he's already been banged up this year. Okay. Dez has fought through the oblique injury, which made him miss time. Now he's got a groin. And you're playing a bunch of games in a small amount of time, in a condensed schedule. Brandon is a little bit different. Brandon gets popped in the face on
Friday, you could tell me Brandon was in concussion protocol and I would have bought it. I'm not saying he was for certain, but at the minimum, we know this. Brandon had 6 stitches in his mouth. So, okay, that one we can understand. And then Vince Williams is coming back from an injury, and you've been very cautious because he came back from an injury to start the season, gets hurt again, and you're trying to balance all that. My whole deal is, do you really need to balance all 4 at the same time?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Unless they felt like they were emergency, and that's why I said a statement they made, they might really feel like we just want to be healthy. Unlike the NCAA term, they might feel like once we get in, they might feel like the teams might be on about on the same level.
I mean, to your point, this is what, when the Grizzlies lost to the Warriors, Ja's first real playoff go. So the year before they made it, they played in they lost to the Jazz in 5 in the first round. But the next season when they win the division, they're the 2 seed, they beat the Timberwolves, and then they got the 2 seed largely because the Warriors, Steph like hurts his ankle, and they had a bunch of kind of like nagging injuries. They're like, screw it, we think it's more important to be healthy than it is to get a 2 seed. We'll be fine. We'll go and win a game and flip home court anyway. My only problem with that is that was the Golden State Warriors. They had Steph. They had Klay. I think he's the most overrated player of generation. They also had Draymond.
Yeah.
They had a championship pedigree, whereas this team has 1 playoff series win.
Who do you think the most overrated player is?
Draymond.
Okay,
if Draymond got it drafted by the Kings, we wouldn't know who he is.
Yeah, or the Pistons and stuff like that. Yeah, I agree. Were you talking about Steph or Klay?
Pretty
good.
No, and I would argue, like, pre-knee Achilles, Klay is one of the more underrated players of the generation.
Yeah, he's almost as lethal as Steph shooting it.
Like, and he had to guard everybody.
He did. He was a really big two-way player back then. Yeah, before that. No, I'm with you, but the Grizzlies probably feel like, you know, today defense, look at the Eagles this year. They hadn't won one, but, you know, they was no safe run. You're not going to do this run. You're not. So they feel like, I think everybody in the West feel like, as long as you ain't got to play OKC.
Yeah.
Some people think Denver a bad matchup, but everything else, people feel like it's just up in the air.
No, and I mean, I think that's the thing. It's like 2 through 8 or 9, like, yeah, there are a lot of paths for the Grizzlies to get a first-round exit. There's also a lot of paths for the Grizzlies to move on.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
I agree with you. It's definitely up in the air. Speaking of the Grizzlies have partnered with Club Tales to give one lucky winner the ultimate game day experience for you and a guest. This includes access to the pregame shoot-around, an autograph session, and a Grizzlies swag bag. Visit grizzlies.com/cuptails. For more information, you must be 21 or older to win. When we come back, let's talk Tigers. We'll do that with Munns next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Munns is the Tiger basketball beat writer, of course, for the commercial appeal. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at Munsley. Also, just been nominated have his portfolio for the APSE Division C Top 10, so the winners will be announced on April. Congratulations to you, Munns.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
I always used to enjoy ripping on Mark for not getting nominated. That was always something very much enjoyed. Let's get into basketball. Before we do that, the Cena heel turn ranks where on heel turns for you?
If it's not first, it's tied for first.
Okay, so what are in the running? So we have Hogan, NWO.
Okay.
Do we have Brett turning on Austin? Do you count that up there?
I don't know. That seemed like a steady progression. I would put Shawn Michaels turning on Marty Jannetty.
Okay.
When the Rockers were a thing, and he super kicked him he super kicked him, then he picked him up and threw him through the barbershop window.
Yep. Shout out to the WWE Network when we could like just watch all that. That was amazing.
Yeah, like I just remember, you know, I was probably, I don't know, 11 or 12 at the time, and just my jaw was on the floor for days when that happened. I don't know. I can't really think of too many others that took me so by surprise. And, you know, maybe that's partially on me. that I'm more of a casual observer than I used to be, but I, you know, I've seen some people say that, you know, that there were some predictions that Cena was going to be doing this pretty soon.
They did not mention him throughout the pay-per-view a lot at all. And normally when Cena's going to appear, they won't stop talking about him.
Yeah, so I didn't see it coming. But you know, I recognize that others might have, and so for that reason, maybe it gets knocked down a peg or two. But I think what brings it back up a notch or two is the execution. Flawless.
And then it also reminded me of Cody's Mania run last year, where it's like, okay, the build up to WrestleMania is, Cody, you're just going to steadily bleed out for like 6 to 8 weeks on national TV every time.
Yeah, it was just great. I thought that all parties, with the exception of maybe Travis Scott, did just a fine, superb job of pulling that off.
Okay, so let's get to the Tigers. And, you know, I started the show by saying my biggest overreaction from what we saw yesterday is, for all the chaos that we saw during the off season, from the churlishness maybe from Penny, I guess, in the off season, to roster questions, David Jones, to getting rid of basically your entire coaching staff on a Tuesday in September, all the chaotic nature of it, it was worth it because this has been his best season he's put together.
The what from Penny? Big word alert. The what from Penny?
Churlishness, I think. Maybe it was okay. He was very short with us.
Oh, got it. Oh, all right. Yeah. Why didn't you say that? I'm just kidding.
He was upset.
No. Yeah, like all the appearances on different podcasts, mm-hmm. where there was, you know, a lot of animosity that was being aired, which he has since recognized was not. Like, if he had it to do over again, he wouldn't do that. So credit to Penny on that. But no, you're absolutely right. Like, this past off season was another in a string of strange, tumultuous off seasons. And the fact that here we are on March 3rd, and Memphis is, I don't even know what the record is, 24-5.
24-5. They're tied for the 8th most wins in college basketball.
And in the driver's seat for their first American Conference championship, in fine position. I mean, some people are saying they're locks now for the NCAA tournament, which, you know, it's been a long time since the Tigers have been able to say that before, you know, at least the conference tournament even starts.
You're truly just playing for seeding at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, it just, I can only imagine, I know how I feel, and I feel like I, you know, can see, I can clearly see how the fans feel. I can only imagine how Penny Hardaway feels and those players feel, just given where things were. I mean, forget the off season, given where things were just less than a year ago.
Yeah.
You know, where it was like one of the more awkward press conferences I've ever been a part of, been, you know, sat in on, where, you know, you're asking questions of Penny Hardaway and David Jones and Naquan Tomlin, and Penny is just clearly very upset, not only with the result, but also with, you know, his team, and you're just getting blank stares, these really awkward blank stares from the players, and they're looking at each other, waiting on each other to say something, and Penny's looking at them, waiting on them to say something, and that, you know, that was less than a year ago, and fast forward to now, and it just couldn't be going any more smoothly than it is. Well, I don't know, maybe it could be. But we're nitpicking at that point if we're talking about one fewer loss here or there. No, it's pretty remarkable, given everything that's happened in the past calendar year, that they are where they are.
Yeah, because I'm with you. Like, all right, could we
flip the Arkansas State game. It's like, okay, sure, but then we could easily play this game. What if the Clemson makes one more shot in regulation? Like we could mm-hmm. do this. Or, is there anyone that is unhappy with 24-5? If at this point, I would have said they're going to be 24-5 and they're going to be in the driver's seat. I mean, don't you think everyone would have taken it?
Yes, I do. I think literally everyone would have been at least happy with it, if not ecstatic, over it. It's tough for me because, you know, when I'm covering these games and, you know, things aren't going well for 6 or 8 minutes and you start getting these reactions that you see on social media and in sure. various places where people are just, oh, the season's over. Oh, you know, like we came so far only to just throw it all away. You know, types of reactions. It can sort of cloud my view of things. But I genuinely believe that if you polled every single living Tiger fan 6 months ago and told them that this is where you'd be on March 3rd, they would unequivocally, hands down, immediately accept it and be very happy about it too. It's just fun. Like this is, I just remember sitting there yesterday, thinking to myself, how much fun is this?
Yeah.
And, it's gotten to the point where it's fun again.
Okay. So you, in your mind, and there's also the issue of when you cover a team day in, day out, like you can kind of just get bogged down in covering the team, mm-hmm. but in your mind, where does the turnaround start?
Gosh, like there are so many things, honestly, and I hate to say it like that. I don't want to cop out of it, but like there are just like I could say the day that PJ Haggerty signed.
Sure.
I could say the day that Dane Danger got reinserted into the starting lineup. I could genuinely make a case for the day that Penny fired the coaches that he fired back in September. I mean, I do think, and he has said this, this is not me saying this, but I agree with him, that when he did that, it was for the betterment of the program. It was for the betterment of him as a coach, as a program manager. He's not going to probably ever go into specifics as to explain specifically why letting those coaches go when he let them go allowed him to take a step forward in his progression as a coach, but that is what he is saying, and I agree with him. We could talk about the day that Ed Scott was hired or the day that Ed Scott hired Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
I think those two guys have been instrumental in helping Penny steer this ship in the right direction. So I don't know. I don't know which one outranks the other. And I'm sure there are probably 10 or 15 more things that we could point to where it was like, well, that was another, turning point. But I don't know. I think that it all kind of comes together, and it has led to this, and you know, I do feel obligated to say that while this is all great, there are still two regular season games left. There's
yep.
the American tournament left, and then the NCAA tournament. So. The story isn't written yet, completely written. We'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, because I'm with you. And I think oftentimes we like to think like, okay, there was some grand master plan and it starts at this one point. And when you live through it, oftentimes it's a lot of things adding up and that builds trust along the way. And that leads to more success and cohesion. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, I do think, I would point to Ed Scott's hiring being a key part of this because it feels to me Ed has been the first athletic director, and I'm not throwing shade at previous ones. This just feels like everyone's on board for the most part for the first time.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, the lines of communication, I would say, improved or have improved. And I mean, I don't mean that like you. I'm not like I'm not saying that one person or one, you know, I'm not saying one person is responsible for any of what was, you know, what might have been holding the program back in the past, because I do think a lot of people sort of shared blame in that. But yeah, like I think everybody is on the same page. I think the communication is as good as it's been in a long time. I think what you have is also a lot of trust. You know, I think there was some trust that was missing in the past. And, you know, I mean, part of that is turnover, right?
Sure.
I mean, this Penny is on his third athletic director. I mean, he is only in his seventh season, and he is on his third athletic director. You know, Laird Veach did not hire him. Tom Bowen hired him. Tom Bowen / President Rudd hired him.
Yeah, I'm not even sure Tom hired him.
Right. So, and you know, President Rudd's not the president anymore.
Yep.
Like, there's been a lot of turnover. And so, you know, for Ed Scott to come in and in such short order get everybody on the same page and get everybody rowing the boat in the same direction and everybody, you know, being willing to be open and honest and willing to, you know, make some concessions and you know, do those sorts of things. It's huge credit to him.
All right, let's talk about what they have over the next 2 weeks. So now you're basically at a point where you're one win away from wrapping up the one seed in the conference tournament, or a North Texas loss gets you the one seed. But let's say that this dream season rolls and you're able to close out this week with a perfect 2-0 record. You're going to be a heavy favorite in both games. And let's say that they're able to win the American tournament. What do you think the ceiling is for later that Sunday when we will hear the Tigers' name called?
I am not prepared to rule out a four seed completely. I would say that if a four seed is to happen for Memphis, they're going to have to, you know, steamroll. Like, they're going to have to string together a few blowouts here in the next little while and get quite a bit of help.
Yeah.
Like, need some teams around them and in front of just in front of them on the seed list to not only lose, but probably lose a few games. I don't think, like, that is, I think that's highly, highly unlikely. So I think realistically the ceiling is a five seed. I just don't, you know, like, if they, under your set of circumstances, you're talking about a 30-plus win team with 11 true road victories, which would be like, I think, tied for the second most in the country
I think Auburn's the only other team, right?
No, well, they may be in there, but I know for a fact UC Irvine and Drake are both ahead of Memphis in true road wins right now. But the point is, there's like no, I mean, how many other teams are there that are ahead of them? Not many, like very few. You know, you throw in the neutral court wins, it even you know, the number goes up. The quad one and the quad two wins combined. They're up to 11 now. And then, you know, maybe they get one more in the conference tournament. We'll see.
I mean, it's also possible at AP poll, you could be as high as like 12 or better.
Yeah. Yeah. And if that is something that the selection committee members factor in, then, you know, you throw that into the mix as well. I just think that there are too many resume based factors that are working heavily in Memphis's favor for the efficiency numbers, the net, the KenPom for those. Like, I just think that the other stuff is going to wind up outweighing those things if things happen the way they do. If they went out and just dominate teams along the way, I don't know. I got this nagging suspicion that a 5 is what they'll end up with if all that happens.
And to be clear, usually the high-seeded mid-majors, that's kind of what they've been the last few years, has been roughly a 5 seed. And as you said, there's a lot of basketball to be played out, some of which they control, some of which they don't. But I'm with you that I think I can get to a 5. If you tell me the perfect case breaks their way and you tell me that they can get to a 4, okay, I can envision that. I think anything beyond that feels like that's probably a little wishful thinking, but I don't know. I mean, I had Patrick Stevens on Friday, and he basically said Memphis is one of the more interesting cases we've seen of the past few years because, as you point out, the on-court metrics do not reflect the predictive metrics, and figuring out what the committee is going to do with them makes them such a fascinating study.
It is. I mean, like I think that this might be the most polarizing, one of the more polarizing cases in somewhat recent memory, just because, I mean, like, because you have both ends of the spectrum and there's a lot of room in between, there's going to be very little room for guesswork in terms of how the committee views certain things. Like, it's going to make crystal clear how the committee views the resume-based stuff, the results-based stuff, and the predictive metrics. It's going to make it very, very clear to pretty much everyone, what they value more. And I know that probably changes year to year, and it's not just about Memphis. You've got to seed an entire tournament, and so there's other factors at play, But this seems like, because there's, like I said, there's such a wide gap between the good stuff and a little less than good stuff, that it's going to be, wherever they fall, wherever they get seated, it's going to be very telling as far as, what they factored in heavier than anything else.
I don't want to let you go before talking about, I mean, it was a great atmosphere yesterday. It was a great win. In your mind, what was the difference in the second half that really put the Tigers over the edge?
PJ Haggerty was probably the biggest difference maker. I mean, it got to a point, because again, I don't remember the exact numbers. I think it was like 14 points in the span of 6 minutes or something.
That's what it felt like.
I mean, he was levitating. It felt to me like you could have, if I was watching the game, if I was sitting there like I was yesterday and watching the game during that 6 minute stretch or 8 minute stretch or whatever it was, somebody could have told me that he was actually physically levitating above the court, and I'd have believed you, because he was just on another level. He was just on another level, and we've seen it a few times here and there, in games this season for Memphis. But it had been a very long time. And with everything at stake and the way the game was going, it was the hostile environment. It was the officiating that was kind of, you had the officials take the two guys that everybody was there to see off the court with 13 minutes to go in the game, both with 4 fouls. Like, I'm sorry. That's who we were there to see. You know what I mean?
You don't think we were there to see the refs?
I don't. No, I don't.
You don't think everyone that was in that building was not there to see the stripe show?
No. And so, for him, for PJ, they were down by 9 points, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
When PJ Haggerty started his run around the 11-minute mark, they down 9 points with like 11 or 12 minutes to go, and then PJ Haggerty completely took over. Besides him, I thought PJ, the role players, completely came up in the clutch. Nicholas Jourdain with some incredibly good defensive moments, a couple of really, really nice.